Hey, friend, welcome back here to the Semi-Seminary, and here we are another week, another episode of our Bible study series. We're calling the Bible from Grown-Ups. Tonight, we return to the Christian Testament. We're looking at the Gospel account according to John Mark, and one of over 100 questions that Jesus asks, that at least is recorded in the Gospels, of others. This time he's speaking to his closest followers, his disciples, in a storm on the Sea of Galilee, asking them, "Why are you still afraid?" I'll see you on the other side. Okay, so actually tonight, our topic tonight is, "Why are you so afraid?" Again, we're going to look at one of these really familiar kind of, I think, stories we find in the Bible. Sometimes, again, remember the context and the position from which we are exploring the Bible through what we're doing here on Wednesday nights. And that is, we're kind of challenging this notion that we fully understand the Bible as an adult, as we should as adults. And remembering, of course, that part of that problem of our biblical, let's say, illiteracy is the fact that we were either taught these stories as children, and therefore we have a childlike understanding of them, or we might have come to the faith earlier or later as adults, but the likelihood is we probably then still were taught the Bible, who were taught the Bible as children. And so we often find ourselves with childlike understandings, and when we put those understandings up against the real life of the adult world, sometimes they don't add up, and that will cause sometimes people to unnecessarily leave the faith. So, one, I'm trying to combat that, but two, I'm also trying to get us all to have a better, deeper understanding of what is really being said in the Bible, and what does it really mean for us as adults. Having said that, I'd like to start off tonight with a nursery rhyme. Now, I know you guys are smart, and I know you guys are going to be able to help me out. So, if you know it, please don't be bashful. It'll be awkward with the silence. Right? We know the nursery rhyme, Humpty Dumpty. Yes?
Yes.
Anybody say it? Say it. Can anybody say it?
Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses, all of
its
feet's been, couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again.
Okay, so just, and for the listening audience, right? Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. What's Humpty Dumpty?
He's an egg.
Who told you that?
The nursery rhyme?
Let me repeat the nursery rhyme. Let's fix. He is actually a king, and it's referring to Richard III, whom died on the Battle of Bosworth in 1435. But that isn't what we think of. When we think of the character in Humpty Dumpty, we think of an egg. Why? Because it's just been popularly illustrated by other people that way. We've read the poem multiple times. At no point in the story is it ever indicated that it's an egg, but that's what we interpret in our mind. And when we see it as this egg sitting on the wall and then unfortunately cracking and not being able to put together again, all of the original meaning of the context of the original nursery rhyme is lost to us. We have a childlike understanding of something that actually is dealing very much with adult events in the world. Right? And that's kind of an illustration of what I think we're up against with this understanding of the Bible. Another popular one, just play along because I know we've done this one before, right? But what did Eve give Adam? No, it doesn't say that anywhere in the story, right? But we've been taught that it's an apple. Now, I don't think that there's any real significance to whether it was an apple or a banana or whatever. That's not the point. The point here I'm trying to make is, we often fill in with our crayons and markers gaps in our understanding of Scripture. And sometimes when we fill in those gaps to help it make sense to us, we lose the meaning. Point is, in our Holy Bible, it's not there. In any of the translations, it's not there. Right? And so again, we're trying to allow ourselves to stop thinking what we think we know about the Bible and actually look at these stories with fresh eyes that might give us a deeper, better understanding of the stories that are contained in this book that apparently we as Christians are supposed to relate to in how we live our lives. As instruction manual, as a book of inspiration, as a testimony of God's love between God and God's creation, however you want to envision Holy Scripture, it plays a role in the conduct of our lives. And if any of this acts in any way kind of like a rule book, we need to understand the rules. And one of the big, I think, childlike to adult faults that happens in Christian understanding is this idea that once we accept Christ and we get involved and we auto-tune, K-Love into our car and we're on a regular giving cycle at church and we volunteer in the nursery, all of this stuff, once we get all of these check marks, then life's supposed to be easy. I'm supposed to be blessed and everything's supposed to be great and I'm supposed to be able to afford the new car and all of that stuff. And it doesn't happen. We find ourselves still in the midst of storms. And I think that people often walk away from the faith because they think, oh, well, this is a bunch of hooey, right? I thought I did all the right things. If bad things still happen to me, I'm out, right? And that's not only is that not how it's ever going to work. If we really understand what Scripture says, it's promised to actually happen to us the other way around, that there will be problems. When we become followers of Jesus, the promise to us is not that there won't be storms. It's that Jesus will be with us in the midst of the storms. And we're going to look at one of those storms tonight in Mark chapter 4, beginning with verse 35. And so I'd like to actually also, again, we're titling tonight, Why Are You So Afraid? So I'd like to think about this idea also of a question. Because I think we can find often really good nuggets of truth on the other side of really thoughtful questions. What's interesting to me is in the gospel accounts, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, we see Jesus asking questions of all types over and over and over again, right? You can barely read one of the many conversations before you see Jesus throwing back questions to the people who's asking questions of him, to who he's talking to. In fact, he asks well over 100 recorded questions in the gospel accounts. And tonight we're going to look at one of Jesus' One of Jesus' questions to his disciples, why are you so afraid? So context for tonight. Where are we at in the actual Jesus story? Our gospel account tonight is Mark, the second book, first written, second book, right? Written by John Mark, more than likely, is the recorded testimony of the Apostle Peter. What we get in Mark is basically Peter's gospel written by his buddy Mark, okay? In this story, we're at a point in Jesus' earthly ministry where he's become famous. He's become famous now, not only because of his miracles and his healing, but people are really starting to hone in on what he has to say as a teacher. And we're actually going to see Jesus' identity change in this story from teacher to the end of the story, Lord. It's not a focus point of tonight, but that is true. So think in this moment, think of Jesus as teacher. Right? And we like to run back ahead of Scripture a little bit to kind of see where we are in the story. We also like to go a little bit further down just to kind of see when we look at this snapshot, right? If we zoom in too close, we can lose context of what's actually happening in the context overall story. So just before this, Jesus has become so popular that he's teaching along the coast of the Sea of Galilee. He's become so popular that actually what he has to do is get out on a boat and row just a little bit away from shore. And the people would flood around the bank of the sea and listen to him preach, because people would just throng him if he was too close to them. So he's on this boat. He's teaching. He's going to teach about the parable of the sower. That might be a parable. You know what? Again, we're not going to talk about this. I'm just telling you what's going on right before our story. And the story that he tells, parable he tells, right before our story is the story of the mustard seed, which you probably know about faith. And it's the amount of faith you need to actually have things transform in your life. And that's another fun story, but not for tonight. So Jesus is actually teaching from a boat, but boats pull up close to shore. A lot of people can gather around. And after his teaching, he says to his disciples, he says, let's leave the crowd and let's go to the other side of the sea. I think it's about 13 miles in width across. Okay, just as a tidbit of FYI. The boat, which had been his pulpit, so to speak, will now in our story be his sermon illustration, so to speak. So with that in mind, let's dive into Mark chapter 4, verses, I'm going to read 35 to 41, and then I want to go back and break it down, and actually let's get our adult understanding of what's happening. Here's what Mark's gospel says, verse 35. That day when evening came, Jesus said to his disciples, let's go to the other side. Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along, just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. But it's another part we leave that little tidbit out. There's other boats, which means that the crowd that's following, going across the Gennesaret, is where they're going to go, is probably more than just his disciples, the 12, but probably even a closer band of followers as well. Verse 37, here's where it gets interesting. A furious squall came up and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Now, I don't know if you've ever been in a boat when you legitimately thought it was about to sink. I haven't. But I do know that in that situation, it freaked me out. I love the show The Deadliest Catch. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that show. And I always think about how scary that must be if they were legitimately in a situation where they might have to abandon ship in the Bering Sea. Crazy, crazy, crazy stuff. Right? If you've ever been on a plane where there's significant turbulence, even if you're an atheist, you know, a lot of people end up turning into prayers in those situations, right? I mean, God, if you were there, hook me up on this one. So it's this kind of situation, the disciples in the boat, in the storm, and they might be thinking this is the end. And they begin to panic. I mean, we're going to drown, is what they think. So verse 38 says, Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. Right? I find this part of the story very funny. I just do. Because here are his closest disciples. Remember, they've seen all of these works. They've seen it with their own eyes. They've heard it with their own ears. They're thinking they're going to drown, and Jesus is having a nap. The disciples woke him up and said to him, Teacher, right? Teacher, don't you care if we drowned? He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, Quiet, be still. Then the wind died down and was completely calm. Verse 40, he says to his disciples, and here's our question. Why are you so afraid? Guys, I'm on the boat with you. You guys have seen me do great things. Many of you are following me because you have seen me do things with your own eyes. You have heard me do things with your own ears that you've never seen any other person ever before to do. And you've seen me do them. And all of a sudden, I'm with you in the boat and you're afraid? What's interesting as we go through life, life can sometimes be good. Sometimes just like so normal. And then out of nowhere, using this metaphor, storms come into our lives. It could be you're having the best sales month of your career, and you find out all of a sudden your company's laying people off. And because you were one of the newest people hired, you're one of the first people fired. And out of nowhere, boom, right? You're out of a job. It could be that your marriage is better than you ever thought it could be. And you think, man, finally, with our family, with our relationship, with our intimacy, it is smooth sailing. And your spouse goes to the doctor to have something checked out, and suddenly, you've got horrible news. Just comes out of nowhere. You feel like the rug's just been yanked out underneath you, and you don't even know how you're even going to make it. You might be thinking, oh, my child's doing well. You've prayed so much. You've worked with your child. You think, okay, finally they're on the right track. And then you find out the truth. And suddenly, now you see, unfortunately, your child's making bad decisions. It might not even matter what else in your life is going well. Everything zeroes in on that storm that you're now in the middle of. In fact, what's interesting to me, the more time I spend around places like this, is church people are sometimes the best at hiding these very violent storms they're in the middle of. Right? And I've seen people be jealous of other people. Man, I wish I had their life. I wish I lived in that house. Right? And that person's thinking, man, I'm two payments behind on this house. More than likely, I'm going to lose this thing. And nobody knows the private storm that I'm in the midst of. Sometimes people will look on and say, man, I wish our marriage was like that. I mean, they seem to get along so good. And you're thinking on the other side, you have no idea. We fake it on the outside, but inside, we are barely hanging on by a thread. Sometimes you look so good on the outside and nobody knows that you go to sleep at night afraid. You cry yourself to sleep. You feel more and more alone. Even the pressure, right? Even the pressure of having good things in your life, sometimes it feels like it's just way too much. I mean, even though you're blessed in all different ways, you think there's no way I'm going to be able to keep up at this pace. So you put on a smile, but on the inside, you're in the midst of a storm and nobody knows about it. So many of us, when our lives are in the middle of things that we just don't see coming, and certainly we would never, ever choose. It wrecks us. It makes us feel even more afraid, more alone. What I'd like to do tonight is from this story, as Jesus asks them and us this piercing question, I'd like to specifically show you tonight two things to remember when you're in the midst of your storm. Two things to remember and embrace when you're in the storm. And I hope that these truths might reflect, again, going back to the beginning, on maybe a more mature adult understanding of our spiritual relationship with Jesus and what life is to be expected like, to be like, rather, as followers of Him. First one, and know that this is good news for you, even if you're in the storm. Because when you're in the storm, you're in the storm, but you're also in His presence. When you, as a follower, when you are in the storm, you are in the presence of our good God. Verse 37 and 38 shows us. A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. But in verse 38, Jesus was where? He was in the stern. sleeping on a cushion. Where was Jesus? In the stern. He's in the boat. But here's what happens, I think, so often. I mean, I believe a lot of people think, okay, wait a minute. Again, we said this earlier. If Jesus is with me, there shouldn't be a storm. I gave my life to Christ. Therefore, it should be smooth sailing for the rest of my life. If I'm with Jesus, there shouldn't be storms in my life. And I need to tell you, friends, that is not true. Jesus says, in this world, not you might, not if it's a bad day, not if you're unlucky, not if you accidentally break a mirror or forget to bring your lucky rabbit's foot, not any of those things, you will have trouble. But take heart, he says, I've overcome the world. Jesus never promises and never promised that if you come to him, life will all of a sudden become easy, that it will become storm-free. In fact, the reality, again, is often the opposite. When we move from darkness into the light, suddenly we step into the middle of a spiritual battle. Now, I don't want to overplay this and turn this into some sort of fantasy in our minds, but the reality that we're in a spiritual battle between a force of light and forces of darkness is real, friends. How you internalize that and how you manage that through your own spiritual journey, well, there are many different ways to do that, interpret that, live that, but it's true. And I think one of the worst things you could ever do, falling into your spiritual enemy's trap, is convincing yourself that what I'm telling you is just a bunch of fantasy stuff. It's not true. The devil would love for you to be convinced he doesn't exist. Love it. Right? And to think I'm with Jesus, nothing should go wrong, is a distortion of the message of the gospel. This goes all the way back to the beginning. Right? If you think if you're with Jesus, everything will be storm-free, and this story should give you proof of that. But this is the same thing as misunderstanding the fact that Humpty Dumpty is an egg. This is the exact opposite of what the gospel message actually teaches us. Not that our lives become storm-free, it's that we have supernatural power now in the midst of storm. That's the good news. Right? That God never, ever, 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 ever promises that just because Jesus is on the boat that the storm won't rock you. What he promises is the storm won't sink you. Because God is with you. God's for you. There's nothing that can take you out of the presence of God. Jesus was in the storm. He's on the boat. And for us, that should be a total game changer. Every now and then, some of us, I think, right, when we're in the middle of a storm and it's going really, really badly, what will happen is people on the sidelines will look on and say, how are you getting through this? How are you enduring all of this stuff? When your world's falling apart, you don't seem to be falling apart. How come, pardon me, how come if everything's going wrong in your life, you still seem to have this quiet confidence? Why is it that you're in the middle of a storm and somehow you can have this deep assurance? How do you have peace in the middle of the storm? How? Remembering Jesus is on the boat with me. And because Jesus is with me, I can use Jesus' strength. I can sense Jesus' presence. I can sense his comfort. I can feel his power because he's with me on the boat. Just because I'm in a storm doesn't mean he's not with me. And this is a very, very, very important spiritual truth I think we need to very much write on our hearts. And that is, never let the presence of a storm cause you to doubt the presence of God. Never, ever let the presence of a storm in your life cause you to doubt the presence of God in your life. The second thing about storms, hopefully this might minister to you, right? We're also in the storm for His purpose. You're in the storm with His presence, and you're in the storm for His purposes. Let's see what I mean here. Think about this. Let's go back to the story. Jesus said, let's go to the other side. Whose idea was it to get in the boat? Jesus' idea, right? Jesus is the one that says, let's go to the other side. Why is He taking His disciples to the other side? Well, Jesus, being God in the flesh, knew that on the eastern side of the sea here, Gennesaret, He knew that there was a guy that was hurting, and he was actually begun to hurt himself because he had been possessed by an evil spirit. And so Jesus is going to take His disciples to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, and Jesus is going to speak life into this guy's life. And Jesus, being God in the flesh, knew also that there would in fact be a storm blow up. Jesus knew that He was taking the disciples on a boat in the midst of a storm. Whose idea was it? It was Jesus' idea, who knew that they were going to be in the storm. So then, from that logic, we can say that we're not in the storm because they were not in the storm because they were out of God's will. They were in the storm because they were in God's will. The reality is, guys, that storms in our life is a maturation process. And sometimes, frankly, all of us need maturing. And how does God mature us? There's a whole bunch of different ways God matures us. He matures us as we get to know God through the Word. He renews our minds. He matures us as we discover our spiritual gifts so that we can make a difference in other people's lives. All different kinds of ways, including storms. The disciples hadn't got there yet, right? They still weren't, they're afraid. So they're panicking. Jesus, we're going to drown. Wake up, wake up. And what does Jesus do? Verse 39, Jesus gets up and He rebukes the wind. I don't know what that might have looked like. You know, it might have been something like, bad wind, right? But He rebukes the wind and He says to the waves, quiet, be still. And the wind dies down and it's completely calm. Then Jesus looks to His disciples and asks our question for tonight. Why are you so afraid? Don't you remember me opening blind eyes? Healing deaf ears? Don't you remember? I'm the author of life and I'm with you. Verse 40, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? They were terrified and they asked each other, who is this? Even the winds and the waves obey Him. Right? Now, I'd said this earlier, because of what they call Him here. In the beginning, they're saying, teacher, teacher, do you even care if I drown? Teacher. At that point, before the miracle, Jesus was just the teacher. What do they call when they see this demonstration of His power? Lord. And here's what happens. The fear of the storm gets transformed into a holy fear of God, right? The fear of what might happen is transformed into a reverential, holy, awe-filled fear of God. Why are you so afraid? Have you already forgotten? You're in the storm, in the presence of God. God is with you and for you and is working through all things to bring about good according to His purpose. And you're in the storm in His presence, and you're in the storm for His purposes. So why are you afraid? And as we get to know God, God matures us, and we grow through storms, and we endure storms with God's presence. And suddenly, here's what will begin to happen. In the middle of the storm, right? We don't have to be afraid because we think the boat's going to sink. Because our hope's no longer in the stability of the boat, but our soul's anchored in the Lord. That changes everything. Any questions at all? Okay, well, that's what I have tonight. Thanks, guys.
Now, before you leave comments, I want you to know, I know that there are different versions of the creation story of Humpty Dumpty, but in the end, I think the point is still the same. One of the things that if we want to take our spiritual journey with God seriously, one of the things that we must do is look at one of the tools we have, Holy Scripture, and give it the utmost attention we possibly can, and not just rely on what we might have learned in third or fourth grade, or rely on something that we were taught as adults by someone who learned something in third or fourth grade. There's so much to be missed. Anyway, it's something to think about. Hey, friend, until next week, be blessed.